Welcome to CUSA Conversations with Chris. We're excited to bring you series number two of our show, where we focus on the unique role of Westwater Resources in the battery materials market. Westwater's CEO, Chris Jones, will discuss how the team is developing a safe and secure supply of graphite from procurement all the way through to production here in the United States. Stay tuned to learn how Westwater Resources is supplying the energy of the future. Thanks again, everyone, for tuning in to this episode of CUSA Conversations with Chris. I have the renowned Chris Jones here from Westwater, as per usual. Very excited to talk through the most recent news that Westwater has released. You can find more about this news via the press releases that they regularly put out on their website. You can find those in the show notes. We'll be linking to those. But really, the whole foundation of this conversation that we're going to be talking about is around the definitive feasibility study and what this means. And the goal and the idea is, as a listener here, you know, regardless of your technical expertise, we're going to try and leave no investor behind, if you will. Make sure that everybody's up to speed on what this means for Westwater. So let's start off with the basics, Chris. What's a definitive feasibility study? I kept saying defined, and Vanessa kept correcting me. So finally, I think I've got it down. Definitive feasibility study. What is it? What's involved? You know, why is it important for Westwater?
Well, yeah, first, thanks for taking your time to interview me over this thing. This is pretty exciting, really, for Westwater. A definitive feasibility study, just to jump right in, this is the feasibility that defines the process in terms that we can now design the buildings, the processes, the pipes, the wires, the whole process in such a way that we can go build it. You know, the process of defining a project, you know, first of all, you do what's called a preliminary economic analysis. You know, and the range of values around that, you know, it's kind of a plus 50% minus 30% quality study, meaning that, you know, your capital estimates can be off by 50%. You're still within range. Pre-feasibility, many people do those, and that narrows that range. The definitive feasibility study that we designed and executed is a plus or minus 15% study on range of values. It's pretty tight. And from that standpoint, it's a pretty high quality study. It requires things like a pilot plant to pilot and show that your process can run at some scale, you know, that you can then scale up to a production facility. And why do you do this? Well, you know, before you can execute a design for something, especially something new, like we're doing here, you really want to do as much engineering as you possibly can beforehand, before you do that design. So that is our next step, by the way. And we were able to assemble a group of pretty high quality engineering and scientific contractors to inform this study. You know, our listeners would know that we've previously used Dorfner Ansapplan in Germany for a large part of our process. Well, we were able to use them again for this particular study and continue to use them for other process development. They're a super firm, and you know, as we were unable to travel over the last year and a half, they worked super well with us and remained one of those kind of contractors we want to keep in, you know, keep in our book. We utilized Thompson Engineering and some other contractors to help with our environmental assessments and analysis and permitting requirements and a few others. And this whole study was coordinated and produced by Samuel Engineering here in Denver, and they did a first class job taking a look at our science and our process, making it into a plan. As your listeners would know, we rescoped the study midstream, really due to customer demand for products. The electric vehicle market has been very interested in our products and our potential to make them. So basically, we rescoped and increased the amount of electric vehicle type material, the CSPG that we've talked about on other broadcasts. And we're super excited about it. It was a big effort. It took months to get done. I think we officially kicked it off right about the first of this year, and we're able to issue results from that study just 5 days ago.
Yeah, it's definitely exciting. And like we mentioned, a lot of the details, we may not touch on specifically on this half hour session, but there's tremendous level of detail in the press release that you can take a look at. I think down the same vein of the detail side of things, what does kind of disclosing this to the public look like? Obviously, like you mentioned, there's a massive market demand for a number of reasons, some blossoming industries that we've talked about. And obviously, as investors, we want our companies we invest in to have competitive advantage. I think there's a lot of things at play with something like this, So what was the purpose for rescaling? Like, what does that actually mean from customer demand? Like, how has that been a part of Westwater's practice so far? And then, why release what you have and not others and things like that? Help us understand what releasing a DFS looks like in the market.
You bet. So we don't release the entire report. And the simple reasons for that is there's really important market-based information that is unique to us and our project and our product. There's also a long specific design for our process for purifying the graphite. The reason we don't release it, quite frankly, is we've applied for a patent for that particular process. It is proprietary to us. It has been designed by us and our scientists, and it is a competitive advantage for this and this organization. So I think our investors need to be aware that, A, we've talked a little bit about what the process looks like in other sessions. But that's as far as we're going. I think releasing that information then becomes a competitive disadvantage for us as we create, we help others along with creating their own science, but we don't want to do that.
That makes a lot of sense. As I was reading through your press release as well, there was three distinct phases that were mentioned. Can you help me understand this definitive feasibility study? Is this quantifying all three phases? Like, what are these phases, and how do you think about the growth trajectory from there with those phases?
So the definitive phase defines the parameters in the process for phase one, which is 3,700 tons a year of CSPG production, and about that same amount in addition to as fines, purified fines. We sell both those products into the marketplace. They're different markets, of course. Purified fines can be made into purified micronized graphite for alkaline power cells and the like. And the CSPG goes into electric vehicles and all lithium-ion batteries. Phase two of our project is an expansion of our productive capacity from 3,700 tons a year to 15,800 tons per year. It's a big expansion. So some 4.3 or 4 times the size for phase two. For that, we have what's called a pre-feas quality estimate. For that, we took what we knew for phase one and we factored it for phase two. The act of factoring reduces the precision of the estimate. And what we will do is we will do a DFS for phase two that will be based on learnings that we developed as a result of constructing our phase one and operating it, so that we can improve upon that design based on experience. And the same process. We'll go through the DFS process, which should be somewhat shorter because much of the science is going to be developed on time for the process. And We expect phase two to be up and operational in 2025 in this particular set of studies. There is a phase three, which involves the design and operation of our mine. That's scheduled for operations in 2028. We're drilling on, doing development and exploration drilling on that project right now. So as we develop our knowledge about the graphite deposit, we will then begin designing that and bring that up to DFS level. And we have plenty of time to get that done. And also, we need to start a pretty long permitting process for the mine at some point. I think, for phase three for the mine, I would say wait and see. We're all waiting and seeing this one. For phase two, we have a pretty good idea what that's going to look like. At PFS level, that's pretty good. That's not enough to build it yet. But the phase one is interesting and unique in a lot of different ways. First of all, it puts us in the market for selling battery-grade graphite. So our dream for this company has been to make it sustainable in terms of cash flow to start and then use that as a platform for growth later. Well, phase one does that. And we have a pretty conservative estimate of the capital expenditures. We're pretty sure about what the operational costs are going to be. And based on that, $20 million $20 million per year of cash flow, is just nothing to be ashamed of. That's for sure. It's a darn good start on what is destined to be a far larger project.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome. let's put it frankly, it's awesome. So I think there's two questions that I want to touch on next. One, you mentioned kind of the starting down the construction side of things. And I know, there was some awesome events that happened recently down in Alabama that we did some bonus episodes on this podcast. And then there's also more resources. If this is the way you're kind of consuming your info about Westwater, there's more resources in the show notes of that episode as well for you to take a look at, so that you kind of get a little bit more of a background of this next question. But tell me about the property and the buildings and what the kind of the plans are for that. And is that related to this study? Like, is that what's really the infrastructure behind the study? Or, if you could map that out for me a little bit, that'd be great.
So as we, previously discussed, we acquired 74 and some acres of land in Alabama. To remind the readers, we got that for free. And that was because we had promised to develop a business on that site looking a lot like the one we're promising to do right now. In addition, there's some $34 million worth of tax and tax abatements and other incentives for us to utilize as part of our operation. So the state of Alabama and the Lake Martin Industrial Park, the Industrial Development Board, the county and the municipality are all solidly behind this project. But what we announced on Tuesday of this past week was that we had also acquired two more buildings in the industrial park and, in fact, closed on those day before yesterday, about 90,000 square feet of warehouse and office space that will jumpstart our production schedule certainly by that amount. So about 60,000 feet of an open structure, an open floor plan structure, will be utilized for warehousing, both for finished product storage and for our parts and pieces warehouses that will need for spare parts. The other building is 30,000 square feet, and it'll be our admin. And ultimately, in addition to that, it will house our core storage, for our geologic materials, stuff we generate when we drill, and our lab, as well as a full-blown office building, training facility, and some other stuff. So we are super excited about that.
Yeah, yeah, wow.
And
it's right down the street, right? Sounds like.
actually, right across the street.
Okay.
So It is the admin building is across the street from where the plant is destined to be built at this point. And that warehouse facility is adjacent on the same side of the street. So it's really, we are the majority occupants, if you will, of the industrial park now. And there's a lot of stuff happening, as you might guess, in terms of gathering contractors and building our owners team and our project management teams are all happening in real time. So I think our investors should expect that we will be providing bulletins as we execute as we execute and achieve milestones forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think that kind of speaks to, and you touched on this with when we talked through kind of the phases as well, and also the increase of scope, putting yourself in the shareholders' shoes, like what does the results of this study, the acquisition of buildings, you know, the stamp of approval from the local and state municipalities, what are these results in this incredibly exciting past few months for Westwater? What do you think that means for shareholders overall, moving forward?
More than anything else, it means we're keeping our promises to our shareholders. We told people that we were going to go build a graphite facility. These are milestone events, allocating $200 million or so to go build. That also happened this week, go build the facility. And of which we have more than half that money already in the treasury. So what does it mean for a shareholder? It means we're doing what we said we're going to do. And you don't need a telescope anymore to see when this thing's going to work. I think, you just stand on your tippy toes and you can see 17 months in the future.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's a really important point because, there's some, not necessarily complexity. I think you broke it down perfectly there. It's quite simple, but if you get caught up in the numbers and things like that, it can sometimes get maybe confusing for people, but it simply put, this has defined exactly how Westwater can become a cash flow positive organization and then continue to build upon that. And, the 2025, 2028 is the roadmap. This is already defined, the cash flow positive schedule that, and like Chris just mentioned, with accuracy. I think that's the big thing that I'm pulling from our conversation right now is this DFS there's a level of accuracy to this that is now, ready to go. you're ready to go with that. So I think that's pretty cool. Anything else on sort of the production and construction side of things? Anything you can share there on over the course of these next 17 months? What does that look like?
So you mentioned, I broke it down in simple terms, and thank you for that. Remember this, that all of the really complicated and hard work is happening, yes, on the ground.
By others. Yes.
This team is took a 2-hour break on Monday after our board meeting and then relit at noon. I mean, it was it's an amazing group of people. For which I am grateful for the opportunity to work with. So what, what's going on? Well, we got to find contractors to go build this. Now, we were already working on that, and we've shortlisted. So I think our investors over the course of the next, 120 to 150 days should really be looking for milestones like we picked. We picked a construction contractor, we picked project managers, we picked this, we've begun to secure long lead items. These are the expensive, hard to build pieces of our plant that need to be ordered ahead of time. And you should be looking for milestones like that. And the folks we have and the team we are growing every chance we get in Alabama are out there securing contracts and bids and you should see things like, you know, constructed started on what day, whatever day, and you should see we're on time, or you should see events that continue to remind people that we're acting on our plan and our plan is good.
You know, one thing to remind everyone who's listening to this particular episode, you know, our first series, when I first met Chris and started to meet his team as well, you know, this company attracts, retains, and has grown really valuable, talented people, experts in the field, you know, in their respective fields. And, you know, that's why we wanted to highlight Savat and Jay and Dane. You know, we wanted to highlight these people. And I think one of the things that I've noticed over the past, you know, few months as well is that hasn't stopped either. You know, you continue to bring on some pretty awesome talent. We're hoping to continue to highlight those people. But to keep in mind as a listener here as well, this is the same skill set, you know, that we're talking about here of attracting valuable firms to help partner, you know, and Chris mentioned a few of them and with the DFS and that are producing for Westwater. And I think it's pretty awesome to align myself, you know, and I'm as a, you know, someone that I'm excited to be a part of, you know, this story in a small way is to see how you've done that consistently over the last few years. And I think that this, this DFS is another testament to that. And the future, like we mentioned last time I interviewed you, the future's bright and continues to get brighter. And the future continues, like you said, not so distant future. So it's going to be an exciting time, I think, to kind of see this play out over the next, you know, year and a half or so. You know, very excited about that. No real question there, but I know we're coming up on time. I got to let you go here. But any last thoughts that you want to leave, you know, the audience with here?
I would, I'd encourage people that are listening, you know, go to our website. There are actually two websites that we are maintaining now. Westwater Resources, of course, is the umbrella website for the company. But there's also one that is really Alabama Graphite Products specific. So you can find them both at westwaterresources.net. Periodic press releases as we go through. You know, that's the, you know, that's certainly the minimum standard for us to make sure everybody's up to speed. But, you know, we held a conference call yesterday for interested investors, had pretty good attendance on that, and I got some great questions. You should plan on us talking about our milestones as we hit them. This is every bit as exciting for us as it is for anybody else in the world. And, you know, once again, I can't say too often, I am blessed to be working with a team like we have at in our graphite business and in our office here in Denver. The level of enthusiasm and energy here has never been better. And it is infectious when you get down to the, when you get to the office and get on the phone and video calls to these guys, and whenever it is we can get to Alabama to see the project in flesh. So it's an exciting time, and I just can't say that enough. And we hope over the course of, you know, between now and the end of the year, that we're providing our investors certainly with the kind of milestone information that that they can use to make educated investment decisions with us here at Westwater.
That's great. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for helping, you know, us maybe not as technical investors get a little bit more of an understanding around what's going on with this most recent press release. And like we mentioned a couple of times, you know, there will be links in the show notes that we really encourage you to look at to get a little bit more meat on the bone for what Chris has laid out for us here today. So thanks again, Chris. This is great.
Thanks, Stephen. Appreciate your time today.
Thanks for joining us for Kuza Conversations with Chris. This episode is part of series number 2 here on our podcast. To stay up to date on what's happening in the green energy industry, please subscribe to our newsletter using the link in our episode notes. We will also be taking questions you would like to have answered either here on the show or on Chris's LinkedIn through our audience form. You can also find the link to this form in the episode notes, and we really look forward to hearing from you, our listener. Until next time.